Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken, sitting down here in pretty warm Missouri today, reading from the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Friday, March 29th. And we will now begin with our first piece from Above the Fold on page 1. Jackson County Man Awaits Fate. And with it comes a large picture of a man with a little bit of a smile on his face and a white shirt and tie facing some people. And he looks as though he might be speaking to them. And the caption reads, Brian A. Manning, 37, of rural Maquoketa, speaks with his family during a break in his trial on Wednesday. Manning is charged with second-degree murder in the 2022 fatal shooting of Michael Berg. And our piece reads, Jurors have begun their deliberations to determine whether an area man was justified in carrying out a fatal 2022 shooting. Brian A. Manning, 37, of rural Maquoketa, is charged in Iowa District Court of Jackson County with second-degree murder in relation to the death of Maquoketa resident Michael Berg, 60. The trial began Monday, and jurors started their deliberations Thursday afternoon. Jurors had not reached a unanimous verdict by the end of the workday, so deliberations will resume today at 9 a.m. Prosecutors argue Manning willfully and deliberately shot and killed Berg on November 2, 2022, while the defense contends Manning only did so after failed attempts to stop an intoxicated Berg from attacking Manning's father, Bruce Manning. Brian repeatedly tried to get Berg to stop, verbally, physically, and by trying to get his attention with a warning shot, defense attorney Gary McKendrick said in his closing statement Thursday. What happened on November 2, 2022 was a tragedy, but it wasn't a crime. The incident took place at a rental home on the Manning family property in the early evening hours of November 2, 2022. After Brian Manning brought Berg to see the residence as a longtime friend and potential tenant. Brian Manning told investigators that Berg had begun to drink heavily in the later afternoon, however, causing him to become intoxicated and combative. Brian Manning said he called his father over for help and that Berg then attacked Bruce Manning. Bruce Manning testified that Berg put him in a headlock and that Brian Manning tried to separate the two without success. That's when Brian Manning told investigators he fired a warning shot that failed to deter Berg. He eventually fired another shot that struck Berg in the torso, ultimately leading to his death. In a rebuttal argument delivered Thursday, Assistant Attorney General Andrew Prosser argued that many of those details are unconfirmed, however, because Bruce and Brian Manning were the only two people to leave the incident alive. Security footage shown at trial did show Berg purchasing alcohol the day of his death, and his blood alcohol concentration at the time of his autopsy was 0.19. Prosser acknowledged those facts, but stated there was no way to fully corroborate the Manning's account of the altercation itself or whether there were any non-lethal means of de-escalating the situation. The source of all that information comes from what very little you can get from what the defendant and his father told investigators, he told the jury. You have to ask yourself, what's missing? Prosser also pointed to the fact that Bruce Manning testified that part of what drew his attention to Brian Manning and Berg that evening was hearing a gunshot. The defense has argued Brian Manning fired that shot to get his father's attention, not a threat against Berg. Prior to closing arguments, defense attorneys on Thursday called two additional witnesses, Michael Liebschner and Douglas Leon. Liebschner works in the forensic biomechanics division of Rimkus Consulting Group, a consulting agency that specializes in forensic engineering. In that role, he specializes in personal injury cases and accident reconstruction. He testified Thursday that he had reviewed the details of the case and found physical evidence collected at the scene to be consistent with descriptions of the altercation given by Brian and Bruce Manning. A consistency analysis is related to trying to determine if what was described matches what the physical evidence shows, Liebschner said. Here, that process showed that there were two people engaged in a struggle with one person twisting away far enough in order to free the area where he was shot. Under cross-examination, Prosser showed still frames from an animation that Liebschner had created to recreate potential scenarios that led to the shooting. Prosser pointed out that in that video, Brian Manning was in front of Bruce Manning, while Bruce Manning had told investigators that his son was behind him at the time of the shooting. He also stressed that the reconstruction focused only on the shooting and not the events leading up to it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but nothing in your analysis has anything to do with what happened, except during the final moments, Prosser said to Liebschner. There's nothing about the events leading up to how they got there, what they were arguing about, or anything else. Liebschner confirmed that such considerations were outside the scope of his work, adding that the frames displayed showed only one possible way the shooting could have occurred. Leon is a Maquoketa-based chiropractor who testified Thursday to having treated Bruce Manning both prior to and after November 2, 2022. Bruce Manning came to the office on November 4, 2022, Leon testified, complaining of pain and swelling around his neck. Jurors will continue their deliberations this morning. Under Iowa code, deadly force is justified if it is reasonable to believe that such force is necessary to prevent an injury or risk to one's life or safety of the life or safety of another. Our next piece from the front page, cheese plant in Lancaster closing soon. A Southwest Wisconsin goat cheese manufacturing facility is winding down operations this month in preparation for its permanent closure. Saputo, an international dairy processing company, is permanently closing its Lancaster location at 425 Roosevelt Street. The closure affects about 100 employees. Documents filed with the state say the plant will conclude operations at the end of March, but city officials told the Telegraph Herald on Thursday that the manufacturer plans to continue packaging on-hand product through mid-May. Saputo did not respond to a request for comment. The company announced in a November news release plans to shutter the Lancaster location and open a new facility in Reedsburg. Saputo said it would close its Belmont plant for the same reason. According to state documents, that location was set to end operations in mid-January. Grant County Economic Development Corporation Executive Director Ron Brisboy said the closure poses a challenge as the facility was an economic anchor in the county. It's certainly a hit to the city of Lancaster and my county, Brisboy said. He recalled the mid-2000s when he helped recruit what was then Woolwich Dairy to build a 28,000-square-foot facility in Lancaster in 2008. Saputo, based in Montreal, Canada, bought the company in 2015 for about $64 million. Brisbois said it is difficult to lose a long-standing pillar of the employment, but he is confident the area can rebound and affected employees will find similar jobs nearby. He said GCEDC is working with the Southwest Wisconsin Workforce Development Board to deploy free programs and resources to affected employees. Now the question of when Saputo will sell the facility is looming. Brisbois said it would be ideal to find another company to move into the space as soon as possible, adding he hopes the new 40-unit Arrow Ridge apartments being constructed nearby will incentivize a company to move quickly, he said. A few businesses have expressed interest in the property, he said, but it depends on Saputo's plans to sell. Brisbois said the property is a state-of-the-art facility with opportunities for expansion located near additional planned workforce housing. Lancaster Mayor Stuart Harper said Saputo confirmed that the facility should be up for sale in late summer, but the business has not indicated if it is willing to sell to a potential competitor. City officials hope to bring a cheese company there, given that the property is specially made for such a use. Harper said Saputo was also a major use of Lancaster's sewer and water utilities. The business's closure is affecting rates for customers. In an email to the Telegraph Herald, interim Lancaster City Administrator David Kuhara said the city's sewer utility rate increased 8% in 2024, partly due to the anticipated loss of revenue from the Saputo facility. In 2023, Saputo spent a total of $172,844 on sewer utilities, according to Kuhara. That number was about 13.7% of Lancaster's total sewer utility revenue and made Saputo the largest customer of the utility in the city. The business also spent $30,192 on water utilities, placing it within the top 10 water customers. John Hoth, Lancaster Director of Public Works, said Saputo used a significant amount of water in order to sanitize its facility properly. Saputo's been a good employer and a good customer for the city utilities, and we're certainly hoping that another business will be able to go into that facility and help the city and surrounding area with employment, Hoth said. Saputo President and CEO Lino A. Saputo said the decision to close the two Southwest Wisconsin facilities will increase operational efficiency. And now our third and final front page piece. Program offers free cover crop seeding for local farms. Every year, more Iowa farmers are planting cover crops in the fall, and Dubuque County Watersheds is offering an innovative way to further the trend. With a financial assist from the nonprofit Sand County Foundation of Madison, Wisconsin, Dubuque County farmers can apply to have 200 acres seeded by drone later this year at no cost. One of the biggest challenges I've heard in regard to cover crops from farmers who aren't utilizing them is they just don't have time, said Eric Schmeckel, Watershed Program Director for Dubuque Soil and Water Conservation District. There are a lot of challenges, mostly with the timing of things. Cover crops slow soil erosion, add nutrients back into the soil to reduce compaction, and aerate the soil. The cover crop seed is spread during harvest season when farmers are busy. Farmers can apply for drone seeding and pick from a variety of seed types. Seeding will take place from August 10th to November 10th. Seed mixes include rye, Oats, a premier cover crop mix, and Winter Kill multi-species mix. We feel like that is an adequate seeding time when you can seed between the rows of standing corn or beans, Schmeckel said. These drones can fly much lower and do a better job of getting those seeds to the ground. Scott Hendricks, Dubuque County Watersheds agronomist, had lined up over 1,000 acres for seeding so far. The program can accommodate 5,000 to 10,000 acres. He said farmers who already plant cover crops have an opportunity to try different seed mixes that they haven't used in the past. The program has had great reception, Hendricks said. It's a great way for growers to try cover crops for the first time because they aren't invested in anything. There's no money up front. While meeting with growers throughout the county, Hendricks understands some of the reservations they might have with planting cover crops. Some farmers are concerned about planting overstanding corn because they don't know how well it will seed, Hendricks said. I saw it work last year on a couple of fields overstanding corn. Overstanding beans works better when you use a drone because there is less residue when you are combining beans. Seeding over silaged corn works really well after the corn has been taken off. A mild winter has benefited farmers who employ cover crops. I've seen cover crops greening up, Hendricks said. It keeps working, harnessing the carbon and that sunlight and putting it back into the soil in these bare fields that aren't doing anything. It's pretty cool. The guys using cover crops are actually farming their soil, and with this kind of winter, the season is longer than people think. Craig Fasenick of Sand County Foundation is managing the Regional Conservation Program grant that is funding the drone seeding program. The nonprofit is focused on supporting voluntary conservation efforts and believes the work of private landowners leads to the most enduring environmental improvements. We are supporting some groups in Wisconsin and Illinois, and we brought in Dubuque County because we already had a working relationship with Dubuque Watersheds, Fasenick said. We know they have a lot of momentum going and a lot of farmers are engaged. It makes us interested to bring in that county. Now we'll take a look at a little bit of our Dubuque and tri-state news. Platteville still undecided on DEI recommendations. A push for diversity and equity initiatives in Platteville is in a holding pattern as Platteville Common Council continues to receive input from the public about the plan. The city's Task Force for Inclusion, Diversity, and Equity, TIDE, was formed in 2021 and presented its full report and short, intermediate, and long-term recommendations for the Platteville Common Council on community and city initiatives at the March 12th council meeting. 2 weeks later, the recommendations were back on the agenda. Instead of voting on them, the council discussed them again due to an outpouring of community input in the interim. We decided that we were going to bring it back in the meeting, and if we had concerns, questions, and such that were brought forward from the community, that we would list it again as an information and discussion, which we have, City Manager Clint Langrick said. The task force was made up of 10 community members, 2 council members, a city staff representative, and Langrick, who said he is still supportive of the recommendations. The recommendations brought forth, in my opinion, are incremental, he said. They move the barometer in slow increments that are digestible. The recommendations include the city observing Martin Luther King Jr. Day and Juneteenth as some short-term goals. As for intermediate goals, it recommends reviewing the employee handbook and city policies for opportunities to implement more equitable language and practices. The co-creation of a regional resource center with local communities is a long-term goal that aims to disperse information and materials related to equity and inclusion. Common Council member Lynn Parrott, who served on the task force, said the recommendations are important to ensuring that Platteville is a welcoming environment for everyone. The need to have a DEI committee or representation on a protocol is extremely important right now because Platteville is becoming a large melting pot, she said. We need to let people know that they are welcome. Royal Palmer, a member of the task force, told the council that it has plenty of time to think about the issues at hand and called out Common Council member Todd Casper, who earlier in the meeting said some of the initiatives were attempts to segregate communities. I would be really disappointed if the TIDE task force were to be considered unnecessary, he said. Just the idea that maybe we don't need it is reason enough to tell me that we really need it. Because if you think you don't need to address the problem, you're part of the problem. A brief back and forth between the two ended when Casper called Palmer a bigot. Common Council member Kathy Kopp said that since the recommendations were first presented, she has been flooded with calls and stopped in the grocery store multiple times by area residents wanting to discuss them. Also, she said she needs more time to sort out potential budgetary ramifications and staff time required to implement the recommendations. It's going to take us some time as a council to absorb this, and I, for one, would like to hear more from the community, because it is going to impact the community, and I think there's some education components about DEI that maybe we need to look at, Kopp said. After a lengthy discussion, the council opted to continue weighing the recommendations at a work session tentatively scheduled to be held immediately following the April 9 council meeting. Now we'll take a little look at our opinion page, and today we have three substantial letters to the editor in our opinion column. Our first one is vote to keep American dream intact, Terry Stewart, Summit Street. Our founders gave us a way to forever improve, and for over 200 years we followed their lead, enacting free speech, one person, one vote, ending slavery, enacting women's equality, minority rights, diversity, welcoming immigrants worldwide, defending and encouraging democracy at home and abroad. But now the worst charlatan in American history vows to derail democracy. This charlatan carried his narcissistic life of privilege and pretense into politics, attacking our national foundations. Never would our founders have thought a man who was insatiably self-centered, cheated on business and romantic commitments, was hostile to diplomacy and civil discourse, and bred violence toward our justice system, would bamboozle millions of our peers into giving him slavish devotion. Our founders' dream to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity is under attack. His hatred and delusion batter democracy. While the majority agonize over his insatiable lust for power by complaining to each other, or desire to not see, hear, or speak about the intolerable evil in our midst. Many Iowan leaders join other obstructionists in deflecting consequences away from this cabal of confusion and deception. The threat is real and unrelenting, but most still believe in our American dream and can vote this fall to defang the charlatan and those who support his deviant obsession. Our second letter. Trump, Netanyahu have similar styles. Gail Weist, or Weist, Lori Court, Dubuque. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. Donald Trump, March 16, 2024, on Newsmax. Keyword, don't. Meanwhile, in Israel, Trump's alter ego, Benjamin Netanyahu, is presiding over his bloodbath against Palestinian children, over 13,000, women and men, over 30,000 total deaths of innocent civilians, in retaliation for the October 7th Hamas attack against Israeli children, women, and men, 1,269 innocent civilians. Netanyahu and Trump are textbook examples of why tyrants should not be allowed to hold any positions of leadership. Going one step further down the chain of command, politicians who support Trump's violent rhetoric and fact-checked lies should be held accountable this campaign season. Media needs to ask all candidates if they agree with Trump's actions during COVID, with his call to Georgian Secretary of State Raffensperger and with the January 6th insurrection. Presidents, politicians, and ordinary people can believe their preferred version of history, or they can access the truth of those events and so much more that have been recorded live, then vote their conscience. Our final letter to the editor, Biden fails to protect U.S. from China. Jody Hager, Oneida Avenue, Dubuque. If you were in charge, how would you go about protecting the USA from China? Would you allow the Chinese Communist Party to purchase American farmland to possibly control our food supply? Would you export much of our industrial base and the manufacture of medicine to China? Would you allow China to hold a large portion of our national debt? And if a Chinese spy balloon appeared in the sky above a military facility, would you watch it for a week or shoot it down instantly? If you answer yes, you're probably a Democrat who supports Joe Biden. If you answer no, and think these policies are dangerous and have the potential to destroy our constitutional republic, act accordingly and throw Biden and his incompetent crew out in November. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken. I'm in my reader seat, reading from the Friday, March 29th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Lois Gladson, Marion, Iowa. Lois Gladson, 92, of Marion, passed away peacefully on Thursday, March 28th. A visitation will be held on Wednesday, April 3rd at Hope United Church of Christ, Hiawatha, beginning at 9 a.m. until time of funeral service at 11. Officiating Pastor Jesse Lent. Interment will follow at 4:30 p.m. at Warren County Memorial Park in Monmouth, Illinois. Lori was born November 27, 1931, the daughter of Harold and Eva McCaw Scheich, at the family farm outside Seton, Illinois. She was united in marriage to Richard Dick Gladson on September 12, 1953. They shared 62 years together before Dick preceded her in death on December 20, 2015. Through their lives, Lois and Dick lived in Aledo, Illinois, Hiawatha, Dubuque, Cedar Falls, and Cedar Rapids when they moved in 2006 to be closer to family. Lois and Dick enjoyed many years of fishing, vacations with family, and in Minnesota, and wintering in Florida. They enjoyed attending many of their grandchildren and great-grandchildren's sporting events and activities. Lois had a passion and a gift for sewing, quilting, and crochet, a passion she has passed down to three generations of her family. Lois knitted a special blanket for each of her four grandchildren and quilted a special blanket for each of her eight great-grandchildren. She also loved to bake, always making sure everyone had their favorite cookies, including the two coolers of cookies she took on the family fishing trip for over 30 years for family and friends to enjoy. Family will remember Lois for her love, support, strength, wit, spontaneity, and unwavering pride and belief in family. She will be greatly missed. As a family, we are grateful for the loving care, friendship, and compassion she received from family, friends, nurses, and staff and residents of the Views of Marion, her home, for the past 5 years. Remembering Lois in lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Hope United Church of Christ, where Dick and Lois were founding members, or the David Gladson Scholarship Fund, directed at enhancing the study of neurological disorders at the Iowa State University. Online condolences may be directed to the family at www.cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. Jerry Brown, Monona. Jerry Brown, 73, of Monona, died Wednesday, March 27th. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, April 1st, at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona. Services will take place at 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd, at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Monona, followed by interment in Monona City Cemetery. Irene G. Havens, Elizabeth, Illinois. Irene G. Havens, 94, of Elizabeth, died on Tuesday, March 26th. Visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, March 30th, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Elizabeth, where services will follow. Burial will take place in Ladies Union Cemetery in Stockton. And we do have some births, quite a few as a matter of fact, so let's welcome these little ones and their families. Monday, March 25th, Fuentes, Jaliz Fuentes of Dubuque, a boy at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital, Dubuque. Pullen, Jesse and Valerie Pullen of Asbury, a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Tuesday, March 26th, McConnell Shiner, or Shire. Clayton McConnell and Haley Shiner of Dubuque, a girl at Finley. McConnell, Christina McConnell of Coggin, Iowa, a boy at Finley. And Thursday, March 28th. Oh, that's it. We already had that one. That was Pullen. Jesse and Valerie Pullen of Asbury. They were Thursday. And McConnell Shiner and, oh, then we have McConnell. I'm sorry, this is messed up a little bit, folks, but we have another one. McConnell from Tuesday, March 26th. Christina McConnell of Coggin. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, I've got them all. Those are the births. Well, we welcome all of you little ones, even though I kind of messed up the dates, but we got you all in there. So blessings to all the little ones who have joined us in this world of humanity. Now we'll continue with a little bit more of our tri-state news. Poverty, unemployment discussed at city budget hearing. Anderson Sensi was watching his son play baseball one evening and saw a group of Marshallese residents playing softball. He noticed they had no cleats, no gloves, no gear. Sensi, the director of the Office of Shared Prosperity and Neighborhood Support, introduced himself. Working with other community members, he not only found a way to supply softball gear, but built a bridge to the community. Chauncey shared some bridge-building strategies and successes Wednesday during his department's fiscal year 2025 budget presentation to the Dubuque City Council. The Office of Shared Prosperity and Neighborhood Support was among a handful of city departments to present their budget requests for the upcoming fiscal year. Chauncey was joined Wednesday by Health Services, Carnegie Stout Public Library, Dubuque Regional Airport, Office of Equity and Human Rights, and the Finance and Budget Departments. What we have learned is that those closest to the problem are closest to the solutions, Chauncey said. We have to move beyond merely listening to community members' ideas and take proactive steps to support and fund those initiatives. That may look different for every community. Dubuque County's unemployment rate in January was 3.7%, according to Iowa Workforce Development. The Dubuque County Community Equity Profile, released by Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque in 2023, reported that the unemployment rate among Dubuque's Black residents was 12.6%, over three times the rate for Dubuque's white residents. We brought this data to communities, just walking neighborhoods, and said, hey, this is what the data is telling us, but we don't have the solutions. Can you partner with us to figure out what we can do differently? There are a lot of jobs out there. There are a lot of programs out there. But there is a disconnect, Chauncey said during his presentation. Working with some influencers in the community, a 3-on-3 basketball program was started at Comiskey Park. But the strategy was to open the participants' eyes to opportunities beyond the basketball court. This is what is exciting. In order to play basketball, you have to have a job. And if you don't have a job, you have to sign up for Opportunity Dubuque, Chauncey said of the basketball program. We had NICC out there. We had community members out there doing what they love to do in their place of comfort, where they feel they belong. The Office of Shared Prosperity and Neighborhood Support reached out to the Marshallese community to plan a similar event. Dubuque's Pacific Islander residents have an unemployment rate of 10.2%, data shows, and their poverty rate is 50.9%, surpassing the overall population's poverty rate in Dubuque of 12.9%. Chauncey's department brought African American and Marshallese residents together at Multicultural Family Center, along with Iowa Workforce Development, Greater Dubuque Development, and the Leisure Services Department. Through that, the Empowerment and Empowerment Expo was born. It focused on job training, resume building, interview skills, and professional headshots. Another planned initiative is to offer the City Life Program, which educates residents about city services and programs in Marshallese. A similar offering in Spanish proved successful. Braden Daniels, the department's data analyst, shared some statistics with the council to show that Dubuque is making some progress toward lowering poverty rates. He compared data from 2018, when Dubuque City Council made addressing poverty a top priority, to 2022. Dubuque's poverty rate dropped from 16% to 13%. Over 1,700 Dubuque residents are not in poverty today. And Dubuque, when compared to the United States and states of Iowa's poverty rates, also showed the largest decrease of these geographies, Daniels said. In 2018, Dubuque had the sixth lowest poverty rate among Iowa's largest 11 cities at 16%. In 2022, Dubuque had the fourth lowest rate, and by far the largest percentage drop in the state over that time span, Daniels said. Councilmember David Resnick said some constituents are not sold on the need for the Office of Shared Prosperity and Neighborhood Support. Resnick said people tell him that government should only do essential public services like police and fire. I think this is an essential public program for the city of Dubuque, Resnick said of the office. You are providing tools to help people help themselves, but there are people out there that don't understand how. Resnick asked Chauncey to pull it all together for the skeptics. When we are able to lift people out of poverty, They are paying taxes. They are buying homes. They are taking care of our community, Sanchi said. They are not just renting spaces. They are owning and taking value and pride. When we lift people out of poverty, they will have the resources that every one of us has. When we help the least, it does help all of us. The city council is holding budgetary hearings with various city departments, and members must pass the city budget by April 15th. Below are highlights from the proposals of city departments featured during Wednesday's series of meetings. Health services. Revenue or resources projected $459,499. Expenditures projected $1,317,396. Expense change from fiscal year 2024, 8%. Tax support requested $857,897. Tax support current year $771,148. Employment change none, resulting in the equivalent of 7.14 full-time employees. Recommended improvement packages, purchase of a stand-up desk unit for an environmental sanitarian for $463, purchase of 6 chairs to accompany an existing conference table for $3,000, budgeting $1,500 in overtime for the hourly account clerk, purchase of 6 live traps for animal control for $700. Carnegie Stout Public Library. Revenue or resources projected $95,876. Expenditures projected $4,504,345. Expense change from fiscal year 2024, 4.4%. Tax support requested $4,408,469. Tax support current year $4,163,565. Employment change none, resulting in the equivalent of 35.52 full-time employees. Recommended improvement packages, upgrade virtual meeting technology in Eigler Auditorium for $13,000. Dubuque Regional Airport. Revenue or resources projected $5,478,473. Expenditures projected $5,619,320. Expenses change from fiscal year 2024, 13.6%. Tax support requested $140,847. Tax support current year $351,683. Employment change, one part-time position was eliminated, resulting in a decrease from the equivalent of 20.4 full-time employees to 19.7. Recommended improvement package, purchase of 2 aircraft baggage carts for $15,000. Office of Shared Prosperity and Neighborhood Support, revenue or resources projected, zero. Expenditures projected, $511,683. Expense change from fiscal year 2024, 16.3%. Tax support requested, $511,683. Tax support current year, $440,144. Employment change. A part-time administrative position was upgraded to full-time, resulting in the equivalent of 4 full-time positions from 3.6 full-time equivalent positions. Recommended improvement packages, none. Office of Equity, Human Rights. Revenue or resources projected, $3,125. Expenditures projected, $462,747. Expenses change from fiscal year 2024, 5.8%. Tax support requested, $459,622. Tax support current year, $434,275. Employment change, none, resulting in the equivalent of 3 full-time employees. Recommended improvement packages, billboard rental on Dubuque's North End, educating minority and low-income residents about the department for $8,750. Finance Budget Department, revenue or resources projected, $4,235,817. Expenditures projected, $4,805,766. Expense change from fiscal year 2024, 13.4%. Tax support requested, $569,949. Tax support current year, $1,027,254. Employment change, the addition of a full-time systems analyst increased the department's full-time equivalent positions by 1 to 24.51. Recommended improvement package, none. We have one more piece from our tri-states coming from Lancaster. Van Orden tours Lancaster Fire Station, discusses congressional budget difficulties. U.S. Representative Derek Van Orden, Republican, Wisconsin, on Thursday visited the Lancaster Fire and EMS Station, where a $1.1 million federal grant from Congress's recent appropriations bill will help fund a long-planned expansion. During an interview afterward, Van Orden, a former paramedic, acknowledged the difficulties Congress has had in crafting its long-delayed federal budget, but said the Lancaster allocation and other community-directed project funding, or earmarks, decided by Congress, was an example of federal spending doing its job. The evil earmarks that you hear about, this is it, he said to the room of volunteer firefighters and EMS providers. There's room for plenty of tomato throwing in D.C., but when you look at our community projects, party isn't part of it. The project would include completing a second floor to the station, which would allow overnight stays for faster response times, plus a new roof and safety upgrades. According to Fire Chief Steve Braun, the project has been prioritized since 2021, especially following a 2023 engineering study. That gave us a look at the mechanicals of the building, what was wearing out and needed to be replaced, and basically what we would have to do to extend the life of this facility another 100 years, Braun told the Telegraph Herald. That married together with what we have to do to grow and meet our capacity needs. Van Orden said that Lancaster's project easily rose to his top community projects list as he prioritizes public safety just beneath drinking water quality. Lancaster's population is growing, which is nice, and there's a college here. So the department's being able to expand their capacity to provide more services is great. Braun said Lancaster will still have to provide a local match for half of the estimated $2.3 million project, with the Lancaster Fire EMS Group having raised more than $300,000 toward that as a way to reduce the cost to local governments. It's a hard time to ask something like this of anybody with what all cities and counties are going through, Braun said. So we're trying to get that local government cost down as much as we can. The Lancaster Fire and EMS Station project was also prioritized by U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, Democrat, Wisconsin, who announced the project in a shared release with Van Orden earlier this month. Now we'll continue with our bits and pieces of news in brief. Man sentenced to over 11 years in federal prison for trafficking meth. A Dubuque man, who prosecutors said trafficked more than 300 pounds of crystal methamphetamine locally, was sentenced Thursday to more than 11 years in federal prison. Jason Loffenberg, 39, was given a 135-month prison sentence in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids after pleading guilty in October to conspiracy to distribute 500 grams of more of a mixture or substance containing a detectable amount of methamphetamine and 50 grams of pure methamphetamine, according to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Iowa. U.S. District Court Judge Leonard T. Strand also imposed a 4-year term of supervised release following the prison term. There's no parole in the federal system. The release states that evidence at his hearing showed that Loffenberg and co-conspirators trafficked more than 300 pounds of ice or crystal methamphetamine in the Dubuque area from 2019 to 2021. Each pound cost Loffenberg about $3,500. Authorities, 2 people injured in 2-vehicle Grant County crash from Patch Grove. Authorities said 2 people were injured in a 2-vehicle crash in Grant County. Olivia Blum, 21, of Glen Haven, was transported to a local hospital for treatment of neck pain, while Jason Von Bruckenhauser, 47, of Dixon, complained of ankle and leg pain but was not transported, according to the Grant County Sheriff's Department. A press release states that Von Bruckhauser was traveling north on Wisconsin 35-133 near the intersection with U.S. 18 at approximately 11:36 p.m. Wednesday when he failed to yield at a stop sign and struck Blum's vehicle, which was traveling west on U.S. 18. The investigation determined that fatigue was a contributing factor in the crash. Von Bruckhauser will be issued a citation for failure to stop at a stop sign and inattentive driving, according to the release. Grassley, scheduled to visit Maquoketa next week. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican Iowa, is expected to visit an entrepreneurship hub and co-working space in Maquoketa next week. Grassley will tour Innovate 120 before holding a town hall event at 2:05 p.m. Friday, April 5th, at the establishment, 120 South Main Street, according to a press release. The public is invited to the 40-minute town hall event. Light refreshments will be served. McDonough Foundation to accept grant applications. Applications for annual grants from the James B. and Melita A. McDonough Foundation will be available beginning Monday, April 1st. They are available online at mcdonoughcharitablefoundation.org. A press release states that since its inception in 2013, the McDonough Foundation has awarded more than $5 million to nonprofit and charitable organizations in Dubuque, Jackson, Delaware, Clayton, Jones, Fayette, and Buchanan counties in Iowa. The foundation anticipates providing approximately $400,000 in grants to organizations this year. The application deadline is May 31st. Grants are awarded in July. Dubuque to begin fire hydrant flushing April 1st. The city of Dubuque plans to flush its fire hydrants this spring and summer. The project will begin Monday, April 1st and continue through the summer, according to a press release. The release states that both hydrant flushing and valve exercising help ensure the city's hydrants are functioning properly. Residents could notice short-term inconveniences such as reduced water pressure and water discoloration while hydrants are flushed. Discolored water from hydrant flushing could stain laundry. Call the city's water department, 563-589-4291, for more information. Tour to showcase history of Shalom Spirituality Center. Heritage Works Dubuque will lead an ARCA Trek tour of the historic Shalom Spirituality Center campus. The event will be held from 11 a.m. to noon Saturday, April 6th at the center, 1001 Davis Street, according to an online announcement. The tour will examine the history, architecture, interior, and current programming at the campus. The center was constructed in 1881 and formerly served as the mother house for the Sisters of St. Francis of Dubuque. The site also was used as Immaculate Conception Academy. Cost of the tour is $10. Now we'll have our weekend buzz. What to do on this Easter weekend? Nature Easter egg hunt today through Monday. Mines of Spain, 9 a.m. today until 2 p.m. Monday. Easter eggs are hidden along the John and Alice Butler Trail. If you find any, take a picture to share with other seekers. All trails are self-guided. No registration required. More information, tinyurl.com, EB Lions Easter Eggs. Drink 182. Today, Mississippi Moon Bar, 301 Bell Street, 8 p.m. The three-piece tribute band performs nostalgic 90s hits. Got to be 21 and over to attend. Admission is free. More information, tinyurl.com/moonbardrink182. Well, I guess it's drink 182. Community Egg Easter Egg Hunt, Saturday, Allison Henderson Memorial Park, 1305 North Grandview, 10 to 1130. The Authentic Connection of Dubuque presents an event for kids up to sixth grade. In addition to an egg hunt, there will be games, prizes, and more. Admission is free. Information, tinyurl.com/AHEGG Hunt, 11th Annual Taste of Fenimore. Saturday, Cottonwood Sports Bar and Supper Club, 4716 Green River Road, Fenimore, 1 to 5 p.m. Local vendors will feature regional beer, wine, coffee, and beverages, as well as meats, cheeses, pastas, sandwiches, and desserts. Admission, $20 in advance, $25 at the door. Tickets and more information on this event, tinyurl.com/tastefenimore. Unseen and Unheard, discussion and screening. Saturday, Riverview Center, 1789 Elm Street, 2 to 4 p.m. The Monsoon Asians and Pacific Islanders in Solidarity Organization will host a discussion focused on addressing domestic violence. Part of the event will be a screening of the film Behind Closed Doors. More information, 319-538-5207. Hardwired at the Mississippi Moon Bar, Saturday, Mississippi Moon Bar, 301 Bell, 8 p.m. Tampa, Florida-based Metallica tribute band Hardwired comes to the Mississippi Moon Bar. 21 and over to attend. Admission is free. Information, tinyurl.com/moonbarhardwired. Eagle Ridge Resort Easter weekend, today through Sunday, Eagle Ridge Resort and Spa. Indoor Playland activities, 2 to 6 p.m. today, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, and 1 to 6 p.m. Sunday. In addition to the Indoor Playland, Saturday will feature readings of The Tale of Peter Rabbit, an Easter Egg Hunt, and Petting Zoo. There will also be evening movie screenings on Friday and Saturday nights. Admission is free. Fees associated with some activities. Complete list of events and more information, tinyurl.com/EagleRidgeEaster2024.